Hi, everybody. It's Gina Longi. Thanks for joining us for the NACDD Coordinated Chronic Disease Prevention Learning Community call. Delighted to have you here today. We're going to do something a little bit different from our last call today. Rather than have formal presentations, we're going to have a discussion about the healthcare domain and your work and questions related to that domain. And before we jump into that, I've got quite a few updates for you. And I want to remind you to put us on mute if you can when you're not talking. If you don't have a mute button on your phone, you can mute by hitting *3 and then *3 again to unmute. You are ready to speak. And caution about putting us on hold. We'll hear your hold music and have to find a way to disconnect you so that we can continue the call. So please try not to accidentally hit the hold button if you can help it. So first off, let me say thank you to everyone that we've been talking to about success stories. As you know, there are two sets of success stories that are being compiled right now. NACDD and CDC are working together to figure out how best to document the work that you're doing so that folks can learn from it, and then also how to best communicate how important this work is and what's being accomplished with it with decision makers around the country at the state and national levels. So due tomorrow, you have a success story request from CDC, and I know you've all heard from Kelly about that. If you have questions or I can help you connect a dot if you're having trouble figuring out who to send what to, feel free to call me, but those are due tomorrow. And then the second success story project is the larger in-depth case story that we're doing on a few states who have volunteered. And these are really meant to be a learning example of what you've done, what some of the pitfalls have been, what surprised you, so that your peers can learn from your experience. So we're looking for those to be start to be ready anyway in January, and I expect that we'll probably have stories of that type rolling out over the course of the year, but we'll keep you posted on where those are. Update number two, we are working on a coordinated chronic disease management curriculum. This is meant to be either a one-day workshop as part of the Chronic Disease Academy whenever that happens again, or some states are holding their own academies that NACDD comes in and delivers, so you could choose this from the course catalog. This course looks at management and decision making, making sure you are appropriately accountable to all your stakeholders and funders through chronic disease coordination practice. So like I said, it's being designed to be a one-day workshop. We're also looking at trying to develop it in modules so that it could be something we could offer online and you could take at your own pace. So be looking for information on that. We expect to have that curriculum done next month and ready to put out into the world in January. We'll have questions for you about that next month about what you need in terms of technology to be able to do it at your desk or to be able to get to a course if you need continuing ed units, that kind of a thing. So update number three, I had a really great visit with a group called the Spark Policy Institute. They are located in Denver, but they are a change management group that works nationally, and they've done a bit of work with Colorado, so they're familiar with coordinated chronic disease. And they have a couple of great resources that they've developed in their work, working across sectors and across systems. So they don't just work in public health, they work more broadly than that, but I think what they have to offer is applicable to what we're doing. They're going to join us in January and again in April for two of these learning community calls. The first one is going to be on strategic learning, and how that might help inform some of the evaluation work that we're trying to do. And then the one in April is going to be about braiding and blending of funding and what some of the considerations there are, both in terms of accounting and in terms of planning. I think they're both going to be really exceptional calls, and in advance of those, we'll have some learning materials that we'll be able to share with you. So look for that to be posted on our website in the coming weeks. We are working on a special call series about partnering with Medicaid. I know many of you were part of the audience for a call that we did a couple months ago on how to work with Medicaid partners. This is a follow-up to that and will build on the experience that some of our members are having working with Medicaid through an innovations grant from the Centers for Medicaid Services. 10 states were funded to test some innovative ways of funding preventive care for chronic disease prevention, or secondary prevention anyway. And so we're trying to capture some of those lessons and share those. Like I said, it'll be a special series, and it'll go over this over the course of a few months. So I'll keep you posted as we get that put together and let you know when that'll be scheduled. We asked you over the summer about communities of practice and your interest in participating in that, and we got a lot of interest in two particular areas, the cross-training of staff for coordinated chronic disease and also chronic disease self-management. So we will be looking to launch those communities of practice. You let us know in that survey over the summer that while you were very interested in that, summer was not the time to launch those. We will do that in January, so after the new year, look for emails about jumping into one of those groups if you're interested. I hope that you noticed in our email last week that our web archive of the weekly updates from CDC about coordinated chronic disease is up and ready for you to peruse. That has the emails from Branilyn with all of her, all the attachments and supporting materials also. So hopefully that's a resource to you as you have new staff come in to the project or you want to go back and look for something, it'll be all in one place. And then our final updates for today, we have two work groups that we are looking for members for. One is a communications group and one is an evaluation group. The evaluation, the communications group, rather, is going to be a small group of folks who are willing to meet three or four times in the next 2 months by phone to help us figure out how to best use our new web and email capability for our website. So looking for folks who have maybe 5 hours of time between now and the middle of January to test things out on the website, like discussion groups and email groups. We've got a social networking feature that we want to see if it's useful for this. So I'll be sending out an email after this call asking for volunteers for that. And then the second group that we need volunteers for, Amy mentioned on the call from CDC recently, what is the evaluation discussion group. So several of you have come forward already. We'd love to have a few more people come and work through some practical evaluation strategies and recommend some good measures for that. That group is going to meet monthly by conference call. There'll be some work that you'll likely need to do in between calls. We're working to make that not too burdensome for you. But we do need some folks for that. You don't have to be an evaluator to participate in that. You have to just care whether or not we're doing a good job, and I think that's everyone on the phone. So look forward to getting your responses for that. Okay, with that, I would like to now dedicate the rest of our call to talking about the healthcare domain and what some of your work has been in coordinated chronic disease prevention and health promotion related to the healthcare domain. We asked some questions after our call, excuse me, in September about what's happening and what you're unsure of. And I have a list of those questions here, but I also have a volunteer in the audience who is willing to talk to us a little bit about what they're doing in Michigan and get us started in the discussion. So Polly Hager from Michigan, I'd like to turn it over to you to describe what's happening in Michigan and what some of the questions are that are coming up for you guys.
Hi, Jean, and everybody on the call. As Jean mentioned, my name is Polly Hager. I work at the Michigan Department of Community Health. I'm the program director for our Comprehensive Cancer Control Program and co-direct the colorectal cancer screening program that we have here. And a few months ago, I volunteered to lead the work group for our health systems improvement efforts under the Coordinated Chronic Disease grant, thinking that that might fit nicely with some of the things that we're trying to do related to cancer, and it would be a good learning experience for me. And it sure has been quite a learning experience, and I bet all of you can identify with that as you're doing your coordinated work. But real quickly, let me tell you how we're approaching it here in Michigan, in that this domain, we are linking up with a CMS demonstration project that Michigan is working on, and this is how we're really kind of focusing in our health systems improvement work. So let me just give you a little bit of background. We have a CMS demonstration project. We're one of seven states in the country, and we're looking at a three-year multi-payer advanced primary care demonstration project in our state. It has over 990 patient-centered medical homes that are participating in this demonstration project. We call it the acronym. We do have one. It's called MyPICT, and it stands for the Michigan Primary Care Transformation Project. So that is an effort that has been underway. It's completely separate from the Coordinated Chronic Disease Grant, and it was underway and is its own large-scale project. But what we're doing through the Coordinated Grant in the Health Systems Improvement Domain is our objective is to focus on improved communication between public health and primary care in order to impact chronic disease in our state. And we will do that in coordination with and in support of this primary care demonstration project. So some of the things that we're trying to do, our overall objective is to develop webinars and trainings and web pages with public health program resources that can be used by these patient-centered medical homes and their care managers. We have gone through a process of assessing the chronic disease programs in our division, and that includes injury prevention, and we're cataloging the different resources and materials that we have available that match with the work that the this primary care transformation project. And we're in the process of communicating with stakeholders in that primary care demonstration project to see how we can package that information and share it with them. So in a nutshell, that's the crux of what we're doing in Michigan. And I have to say I'm learning an awful lot about patient-centered medical homes and primary care and payment and reimbursement, and in the meantime, we're trying to figure out how we can create a bridge with primary care to let them know about all of our chronic disease programs and figure out how we can help them. So does that give you enough information, Jean? and that's, others.
That's great. Thank you, Polly. Does anybody have questions for Polly? Or reactions?
Or constructive feedback?
Hi, Jean and Holly. This is Andy Wapner from the Ohio Department of Health. Thanks for sharing that. I had just had a question, and if you're at this point yet, one of the barriers we've, myself, actually personally, has run into is bringing the the idea of public health approaching chronic disease prevention by including healthcare directly, and also by including healthcare in the community. And I'm not really getting a lot of buy-in and participation from providers, and specifically around the patient-centered medical home, which is one of Ohio's sort of signature activities these days. And a lot of the barriers we're running into it are providers who are working extremely hard to transform their practices and don't have time for the let's improve your preventive care for cancer and heart disease and stroke and cholesterol and diabetes. And we're seeing buy-in for things like chronic disease self-management at the business level as payers. Businesses are recognizing it, but we're not really getting buy-in from providers to be feeding patients into it or even building it into their own PCMH model. Do you have any experience, thoughts, comments about stuff, something like that?
Well, I think that's a great question, and because of my other responsibilities, I'm not heavily involved in the demonstration project itself, but we have a call set up next week with the person who is in charge or coordinates the training efforts of the care managers.
Okay.
That are part of the teams in the patient-centered medical homes. And so we actually went to the committee, one of the committees that oversees this demonstration project to pitch this idea initially and get buy-in and really input on how to share information in a useful way. And ended up talking with their clinical subcommittee, and that's how we got connected to the person who trains the care managers. And so we have a call set up with her next week to figure out what are some of the best ways to package and share that information with care managers. And we're focusing on that level rather than physicians.
Sure, that's a good idea. That's great. Thanks for that.
I don't know how it's going to turn out yet, but
sure.
That's our initial approach.
I mean, it's interesting though because it makes a good point that in all of the work we're doing, and we are doing a lot around collaborative approaches to PCMH, rarely do I see the care managers there. It's the providers and the off, so that's interesting, but thanks. I'll see where that takes us.
We will too.
Thanks.
Do we have someone from Alaska on the line?
I'm here. This is Gail.
Hey, Gail. I was wondering if you want to talk about your question about PPOs.
Oh.
Not to put you on the spot. Sorry about that.
Yeah. And now I'm trying to remember. It's not so much about PPOs, I don't think. But basically, I could have forgotten. One of the things that we have never been able to figure out how to accomplish is a way to find out where providers are with their practice. We in Alaska don't have any HMOs, and so we don't have access to HEDIS information. And so the only way that, well, so if we send information to providers, which we can do, about suggestions for standards of care and so on and so forth, we have no reliable feedback mechanism. And I'm wondering about whether that makes any difference to anybody. So I wonder if anybody else has that similar experience and how they have solved that problem.
Thanks, Gail. So thinking about how to work with providers who aren't organized into an HMO that has some sort of systematic way of sharing information about their preventive services. Has anybody else run into that?
This is Ginny in Montana. I mean, here's a couple things we've done. We also have limited HEDIS data available to us in Montana, and we only have a couple of insurance, big insurance companies that primarily insure most of our population of just a million people. So we've taken the approach of trying to work with the physician offices specifically on specific topics and then doing chart audits, so bringing them on board obviously as a partner and then getting them on board with some quality assurance that meets their needs. Specifically, we've worked with like the federally qualified health centers for some of their quality improvement projects and then other clinics and physicians that way. So that's a way to get some evaluation data outcomes from your promoting standards of care and trying to improve those. And then we've also worked through work sites in Montana to work. We initially had tried to work with insurance companies, and I'm going to go ahead and say that we were trying to get them to do what I would say is the right thing and promote use of preventive care benefits. And we kind of ran into some roadblocks that way. We're making some progress now. But so our roundabout way was, well, we'll go right to the employer because they can get on board with wanting to reduce their out-of-pocket costs for some of these health issues by doing some preventive programming and wellness. And we found many that are very willing to work on those with us. And then because they're employers and through their, they're the purchaser of the insurance, obviously, so they can ask for the utilization data from those insurance for their members. So it can be for employees as well as whoever the dependents are on the employee's insurance. And we're able to track and track what programs we're doing with the work sites and then also the outcomes through those utilization rates. And that's kind of how we've gotten around some of that. I don't know if that's helpful.
It is. Thank you.
Ginny, how extensive are chart audits?
Sorry, I muted you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yeah.
So, they're expensive, and we have staff that can go out and do it here. So we initially didn't do chart audits when we did. I used to work in the Comprehensive Cancer Program, and we were doing specific projects on colorectal cancer screening to increase that and tried to find a way without doing chart audits and didn't come up with the data that was useful, which is why we do evaluations. So we have to go back and do, now we're doing retroactive chart audits, and they are a little spendy. I can't give you an exact, but.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right. Hey, Andy, I'm wondering, listening to Ginny talk about how in Montana they've tapped into employers, is that similar to the work that you are doing with work sites around healthcare?
I think we're starting to. There's there are several different arms of the sort of this workplace wellness movement now going on. One has sort of been there, convened by the Department of Health, and involving wellness coordinators from businesses across the state. And that's sort of a, you know, not low level, not hush hush, but it sort of it does its own thing, and is built around an assessment that the Department of Health created several years ago. There's also the significant push in the state from, I don't know if any of you guys have heard, the U.S. Healthiest Health Lead Accreditation System, developed as a collaboration with ASTO, and it's sort of this nonprofit organization. But the gentleman who is the CEO of it is the former director of health from the Ohio Department of Health. So, you know, he's been involved with several of our workplaces to improve their workplace wellness, as well as the Ohio State University, which is one of the largest universities in the country, to implement this or to go through the accreditation system for this. At the state agency level, we're also looking now at how do we do something like that for state employees. So that's more of the public health, workplace wellness. Specifically regarding benefits, I would say the what it shows significant promise, although it's really not gone anywhere yet, is really pushing chronic disease self-management and diabetes prevention program through employers.
Okay.
That's really what I think is going to be the push in Ohio for the next few years, or could be. That's certainly something that I'm looking at is really, we have an infrastructure in Ohio around our area agencies of on aging to do chronic disease self-management in nearly every part of the state. And now employers are starting to buy into that. Employers are starting to buy into the diabetes prevention program. And actually there's been in Southeast Ohio, there's been actually a push for businesses to start offering which I think is now called the Complete Health Improvement Program, which was developed at a Cleveland clinic to reduce cardiovascular risk. I don't know if that's really what we're necessarily talking about in terms of really integration, but I think it's where we're starting.
Okay.
Does that help?
Very much.
This is Ginny in Montana again. So what we have the opportunity, it sounds like similar with our state government, our governor this year before he was leaving office put into place a healthcare clinic for all state workers. And, you know, it's a clinic where they're all paid by salary, so our benefits are covered, that we don't have to pay the co-pays or do things like that. And the state is one of the largest employers in Montana. So in our Chronic Disease Bureau, we have been in talks with that clinic or those clinics across the state. They've only opened one so far, to work with them to do the DPP program, because we have those across the state. Unfortunately, our bureau has not come on board with the chronic disease self-management program, but, you know, we offer all of the other chronic disease programs, tobacco use prevention, a quit line, the cardiac programs, cancer screenings. So we're looking to put together a package and work with that clinic to serve all of the state employees, and then to get data from them on that as well, because there's a strong prevention focus for this health clinic. So we're hoping to use that and then to model that with other clinics and to continue to build on the work that individual programs have been working on, but looking at doing it in a more coordinated, comprehensive fashion that way too. So it's similar, but we're just starting with one right now.
That's fascinating. I could tell you that our director, that is one of his dreams, is to have a patient-centered medical home for state employees. So I'm very curious as to how that goes, and I think that's a terrific approach. I'm just sort of thinking, wow, you know, we would jump on that opportunity around here. So I'd be very interested to see how that goes forward. Thank you.
anybody else have thoughts on the data question about reaching providers who might not be organized into an HMO, or other thoughts about how you are intersecting with the healthcare services domain?
So when, I have a question just to clarify. When we're talking about getting data from providers who are not organized in an HMO, are we talking about private clinics who are only accepting private insurance? Am I understanding that right?
This is Gail. Not necessarily. In Alaska, providers are – it could be private insurance or it could be Medicaid or Medicare. We just don't have any baseline. I mean, so I can get some information about Medicaid services. And I suppose I could try to get some information about Medicare services, but the problem is that they are discrete chunks of the provider population. I don't have a sort of complete, I don't have a complete picture of this, of what happens in the state.
Sure. I mean, I think that's where we're envisioning our health information exchange possibly playing a role.
Yeah, and I think things are changing a lot with the Affordable Care Act, and it'll be interesting to see what that means. At this point, they're just about to launch an information exchange for providers in one part of the state, and I think they're doing that so that they can find out sort of how it works there, and then I hope grow from there. But our governor has decided that the information exchange, the actual insurance exchange, is going to be federally managed. So I'm not sure. I really have no idea what that means about our access to that data.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Do you work with your Medicare Quality Improvement Organization?
Yeah, and they're very helpful, but they're not necessarily perfectly aligned with what we're trying to do.
Oh, okay.
This is Jane. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
this is Jane Korn in Minnesota. To sort of address like a combination of the two things we're talking about, in our state we have a system set up for statewide reporting, which was actually part of our own state's health reform effort, so it kind of predated the Affordable Care Act. So we've been using the fact that quality data are publicly reported on things like optimal diabetes management or optimal asthma management or optimal cardiovascular care or colon cancer screening. And we're using that kind of as a way of targeting where we might want to launch some collaborative learning collaboratives between clinics who can voluntarily participate in those things. To sort of do sort of the usual quality improvement, go through a process over a period of 9 to 12 months to really address some of their systems of care. And so we do have the benefit of having that sort of statewide data where we have a baseline and then we can actually measure because it's reported by clinic on a website and they're all required to supply that information. And then within our patient-centered medical homes, they are brought together in collaborative learning opportunities several times throughout the year, and we're trying to integrate content on preventive care and cancer screening and so on and so forth, into those learning opportunities, which are a lot of the care coordinators like you have in Michigan, but they're other staff from the clinics, not so much physicians. So I don't know if that has that, that's what we're doing in the healthcare setting. But we had a good foundation with our, we have two quality improvement organizations in the state, and there's a culture of people participating in these kind of learning opportunities.
So, Jane, how many years of data do you have, of statewide data do you have?
They started report the, I think the statewide reporting at the clinic level started in 2010. But we had, before that, they were reporting at the medical group level.
Okay.
So instead of, like, each health plan reporting the HEDIS measures for the health plan, it was reported by medical group. And so that would encompass, I mean, they pretty much use HEDIS measures, but they it was aggregated not by healthcare plan, but by medical group. And it was started really as a voluntary quality improvement approach, and now it's become like a huge entity, this thing called Minnesota Community Measurement. And you can go on, if you go on, you can see what they report online. I think it's mncommunitymeasurement.org or minnesotahealthscores.org. So I think one of the challenges we have is, like, we want to incorporate all this stuff into the quality measures, and, you know, there's a little bit of pushback, like, we're being measured on enough things. But this actually was determined, by at the statewide level that everybody would report on these certain things. So we're happy that it incorporates chronic disease management as well as prevention measures.
What a great resource.
Yeah, we are very fortunate in that it gives us data that's something different. I mean, it's complementary to the other statewide surveillance data, but it's really based on direct data submission from medical records, so it's not based on self-report. So we're trying to capitalize that in our chronic disease, thinking about what we want to do with the health systems and use it to sort of direct our efforts more regionally if we're going to try to bring people together, because we're geographically dispersed. So it's really difficult to expect people from, 200 miles away or to, drive down for a, regular meeting. So
right. Any questions for Jane? I wanted to also open up the floor to talk about working with federally qualified health centers. I know many of you are working with them in different ways. Does anybody have either a question about working with them or an experience they'd like to relate?
Hi, this is Sandra from South Carolina.
Hi, Sandra.
Hi. I don't directly work with them, but our diabetes prevention program has an excellent relationship and partnership with federally qualified health centers. And they're in partnership and at the table on a lot of initiatives, especially around diabetes and diabetes self-management. And one of the things that happens as well in partnership with is these centers are targeted for people that are most at risk for chronic disease, specifically heart disease and stroke and diabetes. And there's a real partnership where there's an outreach to these qualified health centers to make sure that they are following, standards and guidelines that are national or approved standards and guidelines, and that staff are constantly brought up to date. They're updated, trained. And it's a continuing, ongoing kind of relationship and getting more and wanting them to implement more and more of the chronic disease self-management programs in those clinics and centers. So,
Have others on the phone used, introduced or supported CDSMP or similar interventions in federally qualified health centers? Well, it sounds like a really interesting model, Sandra. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Okay. And I guess, you know, I can't talk about it in depth, but I'm just very aware of it and know that it happens. And I know that part of that effort is also in the training and whatnot. There's an annual evidence-based conference, and it's specifically for providers, you know, not just the qualified health centers, but their primary target as well. For providers that gives them this updated information. It happens every year in collaboration with Heart Disease and Stroke Program.
Great.
Hi, Jean. This is Andy. Sorry, I actually hung up by accident, so I'm not sure who answered.
Welcome back.
Thanks. ODH, the Department of Health, as well as the Ohio Department of Aging, have been working with CDSMP and FQHCs now for, I think, at least a couple years. And I can get more information from the Department of Aging on that if people are curious.
So is it mostly funded through the Department of Aging?
Yes. We have yet to develop that sustainability model, but that actually is one of the strategies in our chronic disease state plan that we're moving forward with, is to develop that sustainability model.
Do you happen to know if that is funded through the AOA grants, or does your Department of Aging have state funding to?
I think that's AOA.
Okay.
This is Gail, and we have ever since we've been doing CDSMP in Alaska, we have been working with at least one FQHC. As it turned out, other very potential, powerful partners were the senior centers and also parish nurses.
Can you talk more about the parish nurses, Gail? How do you use them?
Well, I don't know how. I'm not sure how many people have parish nurses in their world. In Alaska, the program is sponsored by the Providence Hospital here, but it's a statewide program, and it includes people of all denominations. And essentially, what the parish nurse coordinator does is provide training and support to parish nurses who are essentially public health nurses for specific faith communities or congregations. And the diabetes program manager made a very strong partnership with the parish nurse coordinator a while ago, and through that has been able to train parish nurses to conduct CDSMP classes. And so that's one of the primary ways that we got on the ground up here.
I know Alaska is not the only state to have parish nurses, but it is something that many states do not have.
Jean?
Yes.
This is Jessica from Puerto Rico. How are you doing?
Hi, Jessica.
I just want to point out that here in Puerto Rico, we also are training personnel from federally qualified health centers to do CDSMP. We were trained by Stanford, and we are training personnel from the federally qualified, but it has been this first year. So now we're in the process of evaluating how has it been replicated in those settings.
Excellent. We'll look forward to hearing how that goes for you guys.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Jean.
Yes.
It's Andy from ODH again. I'm update people on something that's fairly new in Ohio, but our cardiovascular disease, heart disease and stroke program, rather, in partnership with our Coverdell grant, are working with health systems on a new transition of care intervention that has just really started kicking off in the past 2 months. It's a new part of their Coverdell grant, but it's from what I can see, and I've only been here about not even 3 years, but from what I can see, it's probably one of the more integrated system level partnerships between state public health and health systems in the state, and they had their first conference to sort of get everybody together and discuss what the priorities are around this program was going to be, and had standing room only attendance. And this is from hospital systems, the sort of big ticket providers in the state, so the payers, and a lot of people there to come talk about transitions to care for stroke patients. And came up with that their priority being primary and secondary prevention. So,
wow.
And that's now moving forward in terms of, okay, now what's next? But it's what I'm seeing is our first real opportunity to engage the health systems in sort of this partnership with public health. So, I'm hoping that actually builds into more sub-activities around blood pressure, cholesterol, and so forth. So we'll see how that goes, but I have some big hopes for it.
That's pretty exciting. So did the folks in the room, like payers and hospital system administrators, see a role for themselves in primary and secondary prevention, or did they feel like public health needs to come in and take care of this?
No, I think they came to the table understanding, as much of the spectrum as possible. I say primary prevention. I think it's sort of primary prevention in their terms, which is really secondary prevention in our terms. What I thought really helped this happen was you had the State Department of Health saying, we are going to write a grant that's going to be around transitions of care for stroke patients, but we need health systems and health and providers and payers at the table. Well, because we have an Ohio patient-centered primary care collaborative, with all of those people already engaged, we could just go to them. We didn't have to call 150 different organizations. We had to call more than one, but That building on the patient-centered medical home activity in the state over the past 2 years really helped this thing get off the ground because they already knew each other, and it was really just a matter of getting them to know us. And now that's really been working, and so hopefully that relationship leads to other interventions around diabetes, cancer, and so forth. So we'll see where that goes.
Cool. We've got about 10 minutes left in the hour. Are there questions that have come up since we've been talking, or other things that you'd like to raise about working with healthcare?
This is Pamela from South Dakota, and I was wondering, Andy, would you mind giving out your email address?
Sure. It's actually, Jean, do you want to just forward it on?
I will. I'll send it out in the follow-up email.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. So we've talked a little bit this afternoon about CDSMP, diabetes, and heart disease and stroke intersecting with healthcare. Are there other historically categorical efforts that you find are good fits, or conversely are especially challenging fits to working with healthcare? Open question to everybody.
Uh, Can you just repeat the question one more time?
Sure. We've talked about diabetes, heart disease, and stroke, and CDSMP being good intersection points for engaging with healthcare. I'm wondering if there are other historically categorical program areas that have also been a good fit in your experience, or conversely have been an especially difficult fit in engaging healthcare.
I mean, I think in Ohio, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just thinking that the Quitline is one that is a good way to establish a relationship, although I'm not personally involved in that effort here.
But it's been something that the healthcare community has been able to sort of wrap their arms around the issues about.
Well, it's just, I mean, it's just something that everybody, it's just a win-win-win situation for all, is getting providers to make, to increase referrals to the Quitline, and just also working to have the Quitline provide information back to providers, things like that.
Jean, this is Ginny in Montana again. I've recently, so part of our Chronic Disease Bureau includes EMS, trauma systems, and injury prevention, and we've found really easy ways to work with our injury prevention group and have struggled to work with or coordinate with EMS and trauma. Certainly the cardiovascular and stroke program has worked with EMS on some specific projects. So in talking with that person who runs those or oversees all of those programs, it was really interesting that he doesn't have any specific information yet, but certainly in that world, they're talking more about using, and I don't know if this is for all states, we're particularly rural, and using EMS and training EMS providers. I'm not going to get the words right because I don't work in that program, but those people to use them as community health workers. And I was really interested in that because, you know, we talk about that a ton, or we did, in comprehensive cancer control, and I've heard it thrown around in several other chronic programs since I've moved over. And I was excited about thinking about that potential and that link with having people who are medically trained to also work on primary and secondary prevention. So hopefully that's I don't know if any other states have worked or partnered with their EMS programs, but it seemed like that might be an opportunity.
Yeah, cool. Has anyone on the phone worked with EMS?
Not personally, but I just learned that our injury prevention program is looking at working with EMS to do risk assessments in homes for falls and so forth. So,
very good.
We have
go ahead. No, go ahead.
In South Dakota, we have a mission lifeline. It's the American Heart Association and the Department of Health working together to put 12-lead EKGs in every ambulance in the state and also to put the receiving centers in the hospitals. And we work heavily with the ambulance services throughout the state. That's just one example for us.
Great. Well, as you are working in healthcare, in the healthcare domain, as with all domains, I look forward to hearing about it. As questions come up for you, if you can forward them to me, we will see what we can do about having a discussion about it or getting any resources and tools that we can find to share with you. This is, you know, a lot of this is new work that's happening, and so you are blazing a trail. We appreciate that work very much. Our next call is scheduled for Thursday, December 20th at 3 o'clock Eastern. It is also going to be a discussion-style call, so in the follow-up email you're going to get to this one, there's a question about how you liked this call format. Please let me know how we could make it fit well and be productive for you. So we'll talk about partnerships and how partnerships, your partnership work is helping your coordinated chronic disease prevention work. And in the meantime, I wish you a happy Thanksgiving. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jean.
See you, Jean. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.